airframe and tailplane icing. Why do experienced pilots still fall victim? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the special feature, and thanks for the download. Today, ANN Editor-in-Chief Jim Campbell gets background from John King on the revised icing operations online course available from King Schools.
The icing scenario has made the news a little bit more this year than we wanted it to, and for some catastrophic reasons. But what it really comes down to is education. It always has, it always will be. What you don't know can hurt you. Let's talk to one of aviation's premier educators in more ways than you can describe, John King. You've just introduced an online icing course, or at least some revisions, to talk about the real issues in how icing can become a serious gotcha.
Well, you know, Jim, the biggest gotcha I can think of is this issue of tailplane icing, because the reaction, the pilot's response to tailplane icing is absolutely opposite of response to a wing stall or tailplane stall versus the wing stall. And so the clues that you get are very, very confusing. And that's why I think going over a course like this and understanding it thoroughly is very important.
Well, the quality of information on icing phenomenon has only recently been updated to reflect issues like tailplane icing and also a number of other stratagems for how to deal with the various types of icing that pilots can encounter and, of course, how to deal with it with the various types of systems available, whether it be boots, hot wings, TKS, and the like. What are you finding right now in regards to the quality of information available? Are we up to snuff at this point, or is more work needed?
Well, I think we got a lot of information, but it's very hard to make sense of it, Jim. The whole thing is it's a new subject in many respects. I mean, my wife and I started flying in some 40 years ago, and we just knew that icing was a bad thing, and it increased your drag and reduced your lift, and you wanted to get out of it. But now we've got new rules that say, well, you really, if you're in serious icing, you need to have the autopilot off. We need to look for tailplane icing. Well, when I started flying, I never heard of tailplane icing. I had no idea it was any different than wing icing and tailplane stall. So this issue of tailplane stall may have been a factor, and we don't know what caused the crash in Buffalo. But one of the things that occurs to me is that these very professional pilots felt a vibration in the aircraft and pulled back on the wheel rather than pushing forward on it. And why would they have done that? Because that is the response for tailplane stall versus wing stall. And we don't know whether they had tailplane stall or wing stall. And the allegation is that they responded inappropriately. I'm not sure that they did. I don't know.
Well, unfortunately, the Monday morning quarterback reflex is still as strong as ever, especially before all the facts are in. But it seems to me that we've got a long way to go to truly arming pilots with the requisite information to get ahead of these things. But I guess one of the first questions we have is, how does a pilot truly recognize the scenario that they have to deal with, especially with the criticality time-wise they have to deal with the issue at hand?
Well, you know, it's not very easy. They say the way you recognize tailplane stall is you'll feel a vibration in the controls not reflected by a buffet of the entire airplane. In other words, if you had a wing stall, the entire airplane is going to shake and buffet, whereas if you have a tailplane stall, only the tail will buffet. Well, the problem with that is that the reaction for an airplane with a stick shaker to a stalled condition is that you'll have a shake in the stick. And so the very stall warning device that we installed on airplanes for safety could make you believe you have a tailplane stall when maybe you don't. So this whole issue of icing in a tail and tailplane stall becomes very, very complicated for pilots.
Well, years ago when we were running into significant problems with stall spin accidents, one particularly inspired aviator and a number of his brethren came up with a universal spin recovery matrix that seemed to work with just about anything we encountered. The problem with icing is there's no such thing.
Well, icing changes all the rules. And as you wouldn't ever normally think a tailplane stall except an icing. And now all of a sudden we're talking about tailplane stall, and the recovery is exactly the opposite of a wing stall. And you have to make a distinction between whether or not you have a tailplane stall or a wing stall. It's very difficult to do it, particularly when the stall warning mechanisms of a lot of aircraft are a stick shaker. So I think clearly the very best situation is don't get yourself in that situation. And for tailplane stall is don't put flaps down and don't load up the tail. The more you slow the airplane down with flaps down, the more you're loading up the tail. So again, that's counterintuitive, because when you get in icing situations, your stall speed increases. So this is where knowing exactly what to do makes a big difference.
Well, you've obviously revised a respected icing course. What information are you imparting now? What was it that had to be revised, and what's the main message you want to impart to folks that are flying the system right now, especially, let's face it, spring may be around the corner, but in the levels there is no such thing.
Well, yes. The biggest distinction that we elaborated on is this issue of recognizing tailplane stall, how to avoid tailplane stall, and what to do if you think you have it. And particularly the distinctions between how a wing stall behaves and a tailplane stall behaves. And frankly, it's a real challenge for a pilot. So if you're in a situation where you're at risk of either a wing stall or tailplane stall, you've put yourself into a situation where you have to do it right with very little information. I think by far the best course is don't get yourself in that situation.
Well, let me ask you this. What might be done to arm pilots with the necessary information to be able to diagnose the situation that they're in? I mean, what is it that we're not doing that we should be doing to keep pilots out of trouble?
Well, you know, most of the things we have in aviation, we have a long history of what the instructors have taught. We're taught by their instructors, and their instructors before them, and their instructors before them. But now in this icing, we're really coming up with new information. And so I think what people are going to have to do is take a course like ours or take another course and really thoroughly understand what they're facing. Because it's a new reality. I mean, probably airplanes have been crashing due to this all along. We just didn't know it. And so now we've got more information. We've had studies on icing. We've had studies on tailplane stall from icing. And we just are simply dealing with new information. And it's going to take us all to get that into, if you will, the lore of aviation so that we can pass it down from generation to generation.
We'll be back for more with ANN's Jim Campbell and King School's John King in a moment. You're listening to a special feature from AeroNews.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits. That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approach aids. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. ANN's Jim Campbell is talking with John King about King School's freshly revised online course on icing operations. the risks posed by icing are not just a general aviation problem.
Do you feel that the airlines, especially the commuters, where the experience level is not as significant as it would be with the larger line carriers, do you feel that the training is adequate to the task at this point, or to a certain extent, maybe the accident even answers that question?
Well, you know, I wonder, and I don't know the answer to this, but I wonder if the emphasis on tailplane stall, which I believe is relatively rare, might have made this pilot respond inappropriately. And I wonder if those Colgan pilots might have just recently been through a course on tailplane stall, and I wonder whether they might have had wing stall and then responded as if it were a tailplane stall. So there, I do believe that that this is an issue where that we're coming up with new concepts and asking pilots to make very difficult distinctions. And I think probably the best answer is they should have been better trained and not get in that situation, because I think to make those distinctions when the airplane is shaking is pretty tough. So I think where the training might be letting people down is to this system. ATC doesn't want you griping and asking for different altitudes. The system makes you accept icing, and we need to figure out how not to accept icing as an everyday occurrence.
Boy, that's an interesting point. I'm glad to hear you vocalize that in particular, because part of the problem, of course, is the fact that we're in a very, very busy system, and asking for what you need is at best difficult, and it's sometimes just flat out impossible.
Well, I think actually there needs probably to be more training on risk management and avoiding that situation than how to recover from it. And I think we need to better train pilots to simply not allow themselves to get in that situation. Because I think when they're in that situation and the airplane's shaking, they don't know why, trying to make those distinctions is mission impossible. So what they wanted to do was keep the airplane clean, keep it moving, don't get in that situation, and if there's a hint of ice, get out of it. These commuters are flying in an icing environment all the time, and, you know, the more accustomed you are to taking a risk, and the more times you take it and get away with it, the more comfortable you feel about that risk. And I think that's a case where they probably might have been taking that risk over and over and gotten away with it and then felt more comfortable with it.
If I can segue just a little bit, one of the concerns that I have is that we're getting some very young crews in the commuters, and on both seats, too. I've walked into, you know, a couple of commuters here and there in a variety of turbine aircraft and, you know, strike up a conversation and find out that the aggregate experience between the two is only a couple thousand hours total and spread out over an experience differential that really doesn't give them the experience that a lot of us who, you know, flew checks and Beech 18s or did this and did that and, you know, had to fly 421s through the Scud for a while before we went turbine got as a function of just a variety of different circumstances and, of course, the judgment that applies. Are the current generation of young commuter pilots overall being adequately prepared? I mean, you know, you've always been about aviation education. Are they doing the job?
Well, you know, it's a case of how do you give seasoning to a relatively new pilot? And the military does a remarkable job. I mean, they'll take people who were not pilots at all, and in a few hundred hours they're flying jets, and a few hours after that they're flying in combat. So it can be done. But it's really an issue of more the risk management than it is of physical skills, in my opinion. And in many cases, they can do a fine job of teaching physical skills, but don't have these people have the seasoning that an older, more experienced pilot would have. And the question is, how do we do that? And I think the way we do it is teach people systematic risk management. I think we can get there. I think it can be done. I don't think we're doing as good a job at it as we could. But that's the issue. You know, the way most of us become experienced is we've been around a long time. We've tried a lot of stuff that we've decided we're not going to do anymore. And we're not going to try that again. And then if you survive all of this, you become a seasoned pilot. Well, we're learning by experience, but experience is a hard teacher. She gives the test first and the lesson comes afterwards. And many pilots and their passengers don't survive the test in order to get the lesson. So we need to figure out as a community how we get pilots who are going to be young, low-time pilots and get them to have the risk management capabilities of more seasoned pilots.
Well, I have to tell you, one of the things I have to congratulate both you and Martha for is that you've been beating the risk management drum for quite a long time. As a matter of fact, I think probably two of the folks that most popularized the concept between general aviation and business aviation were the two of you.
Well, we've worked on it. I tell you, it comes from, if you've hung around aviation for a long period of time, you get to know a lot of dead people. And you get to the point where if you're in a position to do something about it, you feel like you have to. And, you know, you, I, and probably many of the people who are listening to us know some dead people as a result of general aviation. And I think we can make a difference. One of the things as an industry we're going to have to be able to do is take relatively young, inexperienced people and make them behave as if they had the seasoning of years. And we're going to have to do that by systematically teaching risk management. I believe it can be done, but we're going to have to focus on it to do it.
Well, I appreciate the fact that both you and Martha have been beating this drum pretty hard, and I certainly appreciate the fact that you've taken the time to update the icing course. I'm looking forward to getting a look at that myself because I'm flying a single-engine piston airplane that's got some anti-icing capability, and boy, I'll tell you what, it's a whole new realm now with far more capable airplanes dealing with situations that occasionally demand far more capable airplanes.
Well, yes, and sometimes more than any airplane is able to give. You know, a quick icing story, Martha and I were flying a Cessna 340 some 25 years ago, and we got into the top of a cumulus cloud and got icing at 21,000 feet, and that airplane was fully de-iced, approved for flight and known icing. But there were a lot of areas that weren't de-iced, such as the space in between the engines and the wings and lots of the fuselage and so on. That airplane began coming down, and we had full power descending at 2,000 feet a minute. And we just simply ran into the freezing layer, or you might say the thawing layer, before we ran into the ground. And so it just goes to show that no matter how well-equipped an airplane is, there's going to be days where it won't be able to cope with it.
Well, we'll go with another saying I've heard. It's too soon old and too late smart or something like that.
Yes, that's true.
There we go. John.
Icing is probably one of those hazards that we just simply are going to have to do a better job on. I mean, we were just lucky on that day in the Cessna 340 that we didn't get to the ground first because our superior experience didn't help us on that day.
I hear you there. Well, I'll tell you what, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the effort you've undertaken on this, and we'll look forward to more of the same.
It's been a pleasure talking with you, Sam.
You can find out more about the newly updated King Schools course on icing operations at www.kingschoolsonline.com. Jim Campbell is ANN's editor-in-chief. John King is a co-chairman of King Schools. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.